Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Poets in the Watertown area have an invitation to gather. Lawrence Diggs is with us today in the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. He's on the South Dakota Arts Council's roster for artists in schools and communities. He's active in the South Dakota State Poetry Society, edits their quarterly journal, Four Quarters to a Section. He also founded the International Vinegar Museum and brought the book Pros and Cons to publication. He teaches poetry in schools and prisons and wherever aspiring poets are willing to listen. Lawrence Diggs, thank you so much for driving down today to join us in person.
It's my pleasure.
Tell me a little bit about the new monthly gatherings in Watertown.
Well, we have a group called the Northeast Artist Network, and we've been meeting, doing stuff with them for over 10 or 15 years. And one of the things that we notice is that there are people from time to time who have come, and they are writers and literary people. We also used to have a gathering out at Starbucks before they changed their manager, and then the people who were the let's say the regional coordinators weren't like on board with us doing this kind of gathering. And it was popular. We wanted to bring it back. And some of the characters like a Mary Daly and people like that. And I just thought, well, we should bring that back because people really enjoyed that. And there were people who they hadn't really participated. And so I wanted to have part of my role as the one of the board members of the South Dakota State Poetry Society as a board member, part of my role really is to get people in the state involved with poetry. And I consider it a personal mission to get people in South Dakota to express their voice and their voices, because we have a lot of people who have things to say, but we have a culture that sort of discourages people from voicing their opinion, you know. So I just think, well, but we need those opinions in the mix, whatever they are. We need those out there. And so what better way than poetry? Because poetry, we don't have to be concerned with the grammar Nazis and the spelling Nazis. We can just say, well, as long as we're communicating, we can do it. And that's why we have poetic license. So I just want people to have an opportunity to say what's on their heart, or even if I don't agree, that's part of the mix, you know, like put it out there in whatever way you can.
We were just talking about this earlier in the program on the last hour, is this notion that in South Dakota we need to be nice, or we need to be pleasant, and everything needs to be pleasant. And sometimes that makes it more of a challenge to have the difficult conversations. Not that we need to descend into, you know, civil discourse still matters.
Yes, right.
Going forward with saying the things that maybe need to be said from different perspectives.
Exactly. It's so important. And it's important not only for the person who's saying it, but for us who are listening, is to understand that we can put the ideas out there and let the ideas fight. We don't have to fight. That's a tricky thing when you don't have practice not only listening, but you don't have practice in putting into words what you want to say in a way that other people can hear what you have to say. One of the things we, especially those of us who are wordsmiths, we forget is words themselves do not have meaning. We only share the meaning of the word. And that's why we have dictionaries. Don't tell us the meaning of the word. They tell us what is commonly understood. And that changes over time. And so when we think that the words have the meaning or the words have the power, we skip that half of the communication is on the speaker and half is on the listener. And we're always making adjustments to, did you hear what I intended to communicate to you? Not necessarily what I said, but what I felt or thought. Was that thought translated through these words? Poetry, I think, offers us this opportunity to get beyond the rigidity of grammar and spelling to communicate that.
So does the, maybe performance isn't the right word, maybe it's delivery or, you know, reading it to other people, does that, is that something that a poet needs to learn as well as the writing part and how the poem might appear on the page?
Absolutely. Because, you see, the written word is something new to humanity. And we forget that reading is an unnatural act. The brain is not designed to read literature. We have to learn it. It isn't something that a baby can come out and do, like walking. You don't have to teach a baby, you know, it's going to get up and find its way. You might help it refine it later. Mm-hmm. A baby is going to figure out just listening to you and watching your face even before they can speak. They start to read what you're thinking and feeling before there's any communication. Those things are genetically programmed into us, and we can read it. And even if we don't know intellectually what's happening with the face, oxytocin is being released with a smile, whether we want it or not. That's all there. Reading is not one of those things. By having people perform, we can get those ideas to jump off the two-dimensionality of the page. We can get people to express with the timing and with the inflection and with just their presence. We can get them to express things that never would be apparent just from me reading a poem and not knowing that person and trying to put my own sense of what they meant, which, of course, almost by definition means I'm not getting what they were communicating. I'm talking to myself.
Right. I feel like we should pause here, and I might ask you to read us something. Tell us what that might be.
Okay. So I'm going to read a few. And the first one is called Busy Doing What Don't Need Done. Going, going, coming, coming, never time, because I'm under the gun. Busy doing what don't need done. Buying, buying, selling, selling, making money when I don't need none to do more things that don't need done. Messing, messing, stressing, stressing, creating a life that ain't much fun, because I'm doing things that don't need done. Grasping, grasping, gasping, gasping, and in the end, what have I won by doing things that don't need done?
You're listening to In the Moment, Lawrence Diggs, there reading from his work. Where did that poem come from?
It came from my own critique of myself.
Yeah.
And looking at how I was parsing my time. And some things I find meaningful, but I find that in a day, you know, if I reflect on my life, something I try to do every day, I find that a large part of what I'm doing is meaningless. You know, I mean, I didn't have to go there. I didn't have to say that thing. I didn't have to make a certain effort. And a lot of things just basically would take care of themselves if I absolutely did nothing, but I am stressing trying to make something happen that, you know, that cascade that was already in motion.
Has writing poetry and living life as a poet changed how you live your life then? How you look at your own life?
Absolutely. It's part of the mix of reflection and also sharing that reflection. You know, when I work with the guys in the state penitentiary, and we share our poems, and I hear their poems, and I share them, share mine with them. I do some reflection because I want that time with them to be as productive as possible, both in sharing things that they can use, but just as much learning from them. So, you know, in that process of preparing something, it makes me think a little bit deeper about what my own life and how I'm, let's say, taking care of my own life and the things that I'm spending my time doing.
Hmm. What will you read next?
This one is about winning. I had a patient once on the psych ward in a long-term care facility. He had reduced his life's goal to one mission statement. No matter what was said to him, his response was, "I want to win." He repeated this one phrase all day, over and over. One day I asked him, "What do you want to win?" He paused for a moment, chuckled, and replied, "I want to win." It occurred to me that the only difference between him and many of us is he was institutionalized. We are in it to win it. But win what? Here we sit on this speck of spit in a vast universe of time and space, spinning and winning. Winning what? Like a racehorse running with no sense of the senselessness of the circle, we want to get ahead. Get ahead of what? Of whom? To what end? We just want to win. We want to win certificates. We want to win trophies. We want to win medals. We want to win praise. We want to win bragging rights. We risk life and limb to win. We destroy each other to win. We sacrifice valuable relationships to win. We just want to win. But to what end? Is Earth the universe's psych ward for those who want to win?
Thank you. It feels like such a gift to have you here.
Thank you.
How do you teach people to listen to poetry?
Very interesting question. And I'm working with that in every group, whether it's in the schools or in the gathering of poets or in the prison. And one of the things I like to encourage people to do is when they listen to poetry, don't just be the mutual admiration society. Mm-hmm. I like to stress that saying, "Oh, that's good," or "That's nice," that gives the person no data. It doesn't help them improve their tweaking to, like, better communicate with others. And that's what I want them to get out of this sharing is, you know, each of us exist in a kind of bubble of our own. And what's in my head is kind of like parallel universes, really. Mm-hmm. And the only way I can share is to kind of do a check-in. Well, I like to have people say, "What is it that affected you by that poem? What did it make you feel? What new idea did it bring to you? Did it challenge anything that you have thought or the way you have thought about something that you still think is a core belief? How did it affect you? Or even if it didn't change you in any way just right now, how did that affect you and make you feel? And or what questions? What was missing? What questions did it bring up that you would like the poet to answer for you?" So I think I use these kind of cases to open conversation, and I think that's what's important here.
Read again for me, please.
Sure.
For us, all of us.
Thank you. This one is called Wrinkled Faces. The stories of beings that cannot be seen are carved on the wizened and weathered faces of this world. Their chiseled faces gives us the illusion that we can see or know them, while their true selves lie beyond our senses, only slightly revealed by the lines in their faces. Lines carved by the styli of time and events. All those face lines tell us they have lived life less protected by the bubble. Those lines tell us they have laughed and cried. They have experienced joy and suffering. They have gained and lost. Unlike the pretty, privileged, protected, and pristine, they have squeezed life, and life has squeezed them. Unlike the cowards who live sickly little lives, sucking vicariously on the adventures of others, they have rammed their faces into the gauntlet of life. They have felt the mud, spit, and fist in their faces. Their facial scars and wrinkles bear witness to their odyssey. They have earned their trophies. Yet there are those who would erase the evidence and silence their stories with creams, salves, and surgery. They would trade their face value for the promise of fake youth. They leap to lose face. Perhaps they are not worthy of their wrinkled faces.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. Lawrence Diggs is with me. How do you know, as a poet, when you've said in a poem what you wanted to say?
I think fundamentally, communication is not complete until you get the echo of the person or people that you are trying to communicate with. So the loop is complete, or I get the feedback with each time I read or share a poem. What communicates to one person may not to another, and how it's received by one may be completely different than another. So it's not like how one person or 10 or 100 react. It's what's the reaction over time. So as I read poems and I get feedback from people who are the audience, whether it's in groups that, you know, close groups, or like, for example, if I read on the radio or some bigger gathering, and then people respond to me over time, I get a sense of which poems connect with people and what they hear as opposed to what I think I'm saying. And so I those are very valuable to me.
For someone listening and says to themselves, yeah, I want to try writing something, tell them where to begin. Help them get started.
Okay. So when a person is going to decide to try to write poetry, one of the first things they should do is get out of the imprisonment of iambic pentameter, okay? For people who don't know what that is, it's kind of like Mary had a little lamb, his fleece was white as snow, everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go. They can skip the idea that it has to rhyme, especially vowel rhymes. And so some people, for them, they have this limited view of what poetry is. And so they have this poetic license, but they don't use the license. So the first thing I try to do is to give them the license to be a poet. And that means getting them out of the imprisonment of iambic pentameter. The next thing is to get them to say, look, grammar is important. But grammar are rules that are arbitrarily made up. I mean, they mean something, but they're arbitrarily made up. It's not in the nature of every person to know the grammar rules. Otherwise, we wouldn't have English classes, right? So the grammar and spelling needs to have purpose. And the purpose should be so that we can more clearly communicate. If that gets in the way, or when that gets in the way, we dump it. You get rid of it, you know? So, yes, look at the grammar, know the grammar, but don't be imprisoned by the grammar. Know the spelling, but there are some times when spelling a word in some other way communicates more than spelling it correctly. So don't be imprisoned by that. A good example is we're working on our second published book for the inmates group. And it's one of the things that we come up with. And when they write, I say, okay, look, you're going to be responsible for one thing, and that's communicating. If we find, when I send it out to my editors, I say, if we find that there are grammatical syntax errors, or if we see that there are some spelling errors, we will mark them and we will give them back to you and say, was this a mistake or did you want to say that? If that's what you wanted to say and that's how you wanted to spell that and you're happy with it, I'm happy with it. And I like to give that to people who are trying to start writing poetry, because poetry is the most liberated form of literature, so it doesn't need to be imprisoned. We take the opportunity to find our voice and to find our expression liberated from the constraints of how it was said by the English teacher. We don't care. We just want to know, did you communicate? Did the feeling that you wanted to share when you said something, was that feeling, how close was that feeling picked up by the other person? If grammar gets in the way of that, get rid of it.
We have time for one more poem from Laura Stakes, please.
So this one is called In Praise of the Photoshopped Face. Let me make sure I got, oh, here we go. For years, people have strived to be something that others want to see. They have longed to be thicker or thinner. They have pined to look like winners. They wanted rosier cheeks. They wanted shorter beaks. They wanted thinner hips. They wanted fuller lips. They ached to be wrinkle-free or any escape from reality. Painted faces and fuller hair took them to Vanity Fair, but it was only the rich who could scratch that itch. That is, until we got Photoshop. Now beauty is on the desktop, not just for some, but for everyone. Being who you want to be is now just a commodity. No more blemishes, no more blotches. Perfect skin now comes on swatches. Brown eyes can now be blue. Broken teeth as good as new. Now, with just the click of a mouse, you're fit for the cover of Penthouse. Photoshop has democratized the fake faces of beauty.
Lauren Stakes, thank you so much for being here.
Thank
we really
you
appreciate
much.
Your time.
Thank you very much.
First Fridays of the month, starting February 2nd, one coming up here, 6 p.m., Watertown at Gather Cafe,
yes.
Gathering of Poets.
Everybody's welcome, and we want come and bring poetry.